Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour, June 8th, 2017. Many topics to cover tonight. My main science topic, I will be talking about so-called climate change. And if you want to categorize me according to the nouveau scientific establishment, I'm a climate denier. Yeah, I'm denying it, and I'll give you all the scientific reasons why everybody should be a climate denier, a climate change denier. And so I just get a kick out of these, the way they want to tag you and put a social name on you so that you should be intimidated and not saying anything. Well, crapola on them. Neil deGrasse Tyson is a horrible scientist. He's a hack. He's a tier two nobody that's been blown up into stardom. And we're supposed to all sit around and worship these people or Carl Sagan. No, I don't. These people have been placed into stardom. Something like Kathy Griffin, somebody that doesn't belong there. Holding up basically the same thing. They're doing the same thing that Kathy Griffith tried to do. Hold up an effigy and hope that everybody would be influenced by this. Okay, so anyway, but I'm going to go into the science and also praise Trump for pulling out of the Paris Climate Change Accord. And you can tell the people who are adamant about bringing down the United States based on their concurrence with the Paris Climate Accord or the UN Accords or the UN Agendas, etc. These are not meant to save the world. They're meant to totally destroy the United States. And that's what Obama was doing. That's what Hillary Clinton would have done. And but Trump saw it for what it is, pulled out. All praise to Trump for that. Was one of the biggest things he has done and most important. And correct, absolutely 110% correct. And I just cannot wait till all these whining climate change people lose their money and have to drift off into the woodwork and get a real job. Wouldn't that be amazing? But first, a couple topics here. The beginning of the Atlantic hurricane season started on June 1st. It lasts till the 30th. Of November, and every year at this time we get more fake science out of the fake news establishment, where they predict using these statistical averages what they expect, so many named storms, so many hurricanes, so many major hurricanes. And we've got NOAA and the National Hurricane Prediction Center, etc. But listen to this. This is what the hurricane prediction is. They say, to this point, most forecasting groups have called for this season to be near average or above average season due to a combination of factors, including expected transition to La Nina and warmer than normal sea surface temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico, Caribbean, Western Atlantic, despite near average sea surface temperatures in the Atlantic main development region near Cape Verde. Okay, well, what does that tell you? That does not tell you anything. That is like me saying, it's going to rain this year. It's going to snow in places where there's snow. And there might have a little bit above average or average amount of snow. I mean, do these people get paid for this? These people actually have PhDs, work in offices, and get paid for this. This is so bizarre. Plus, La Nina surface water temperature has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with hurricane development. If you look at just the basic thermodynamics, something I am a trained physicist, I understand this, how do you get a slightly above temperature, a body of water like the ocean, to transmit energy into an organized storm, it violates the second law of thermodynamics. This is not what causes hurricanes, so why would you use those as factors or talk about La Niña, El Niño, which occur in the Pacific Ocean? That weather has to go around, all the way around the Pacific Ocean, cross over Malaysia, cross over the southern tip of India, through the Indian Ocean, across Madagascar, across Africa, an entire continent, before it even comes to Cape Verde or the Atlantic Ocean. So how does this happen? Well, they can't tell you because there's no direct measurements. But this also gets into the idea of global climate change, which I'll be talking about in a minute. But just disgusting. I don't want to spend or waste any more time. A quick announcement on the Boeing test. For 3 years, they have not tested any anti-ballistic missile systems. And they just did, 2 days ago. And the end result is they shot down a drone anti-ballistic missile test vehicle that was shot into the air from the Pacific, from a Pacific atoll. The test anti-ballistic missile came from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. And under strict test conditions, it was a success. But under real-life situations, a system like this simply does not work. To think that somehow we're going to put up a defensive shield of missiles that's going to protect against an incoming barrage of 2,000 to 6,000 real anti-ballistic missiles and then maybe another 10,000 more fake drones is ridiculous. Absolutely absurd. The cost of doing this, first of all, would be astronomical beyond any possible means. And second of all, it would not work. So these people are, furthering, something that simply will not work and does not work. Also, I've heard repeated that the U.S. has the ability to deflect asteroids. The U.S. does not have the ability to deflect asteroids. And this is another crazy statement, simply trying to make people feel good that somehow we can deflect asteroids, which is really not the biggest problem in outer space. The biggest problem in outer space are large passing comets, and they don't even have to come that close to Earth to do a lot of damage. So, in fact, we've been affected by comets that are not even that close to Earth. But there again, standard science denies all this. And I would call them standard science deniers. Or reality deniers. That's Sagan, deGrasse Tyson, and the whole crew of scientists out there that sit back in their desks, their government-supported desks, in their government-supported offices, and spew garbage that you're supposed to buy. Just a quick announcement. My paid cast for this week and next week, the ongoing series Cosmos, The Real Story, and I encourage everybody to go join that. It's $3.95 per month on my webpage. This show, of course, is commercial-free. It always has been. The archive's on my webpage, jmccsci.com. And in 3 weeks, the Tesla lecture for the month, Tesla's Mind, will be dealing with electromagnetic, I'll just leave it at that. Electromagnetism in terms of Tesla and some of Tesla's more esoteric beliefs regarding electromagnetism, one of which is ether. Tesla believed in ether, that the electromagnetic waves needed a medium in which to transmit. So I'll be talking about that. Einstein believed that there was no ether, and there were experiments to do this. Now, this is not a matter of opinion. As with a lot of modern science, people simply put out opinions, and that's good enough for them. But there were literally experiments that proved that there was no ether. So people who are ether proponents, wonderful for you. But it's not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of creating experiments that would prove the properties of ether. And this is in the same boat as dark matter. Nobody seems to be able to define what dark matter is, although they're searching for it. Say you went into the woods. somebody said, and they used to play this joke on us as kids, they'd say, we're going to go snipe hunting at night. And we'd go out and we'd be looking for these snipes, but nobody told us what the snipe looked like. And it was a big joke from the adults would play on the kids. But dark matter is much the same. It's a wild goose chase, but even with a wild goose, you know what the wild goose looks like. With dark matter, you don't. They can't tell you a single property of alleged dark matter. They can tell you what it isn't. It doesn't affect light. It doesn't affect, it doesn't have any magnetic properties. It doesn't produce light when it comes in large quantities. It doesn't collapse and create stars or starlight. All the other properties of regular matter. So this dark matter has none of the properties of matter except it produces gravitational fields. Well, there are other explanations, but as the old saying goes, if you don't look for the real explanation, you won't find it. Also, just quick mention, my sale is still on the Secure Web Ordering subpage. I have a 10% sale on all the major water filter products. Remember, made in the USA. My GF water filters, no additional filters required, no add-on filters. You don't have to prime them. That's a terrible idea. Anybody that uses a filter that has to be primed, forget it. Because if you're in an emergency situation, where are you going to get sterilized clean water to prime this? You're going to be pumping sewage water or pond water, or bacteria-ridden pond water, backwards through this filter. And also, when you do that, it only primes the filter in the weakest places. And these filters are non-uniform. They're not even filters, they're absorbers. And so the end result is the water all goes through one little spot and not through the whole filter. It's a terrible idea. Anyway, my filters, JMCC, the GF filters, are on sale for the 10 packs for 10% off plus an additional 5% off. And I have set a quota on these products. When I hit that quota in sales, I'm going to take the sales down. So we're reaching that. I had good response this week, but the sale is still there. So when we hit those quotas, the sale will come down. Go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. Okay, so on to the main science topic, climate change science. It's like a religion. And what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to pick it apart from a scientific point of view, go back in history and talk about the origin of this so-called greenhouse effect. And you'll notice nobody talks about greenhouse effect anymore. So I'm going to. Let's go back to the beginning of history on this whole issue of climate change or whatever, and that somehow man is affecting it. But let me just start by saying something. If you put Carl Sagan, Neil deGrasse Tyson, myself, and 1,000 other climate change scientists in a room, and along with Leonardo DiCaprio, who is pushing this and flying around the world in his jet, making a lot of CO2 from his personal jet to fly around and talk about this topic. If you put us all in one room, or if you looked at the DiCaprio video or the Al Gore video or whatever, what they do is they all talk about pollution. And they show smokestacks and pollution. And it turns out that using high energy content fuels to fuel our economy and the energy required for our economy to keep everything going, because everything needs energy, transportation, processing, everything. Everything uses energy, a high energy consumption. We're addicted to energy. That's the issue. So now what they do, instead of talking about the issue, and let's find ways to economically produce energy without burning high energy content fuels. And that's something I have done. You all know that. And that's, the issue is, that's the problem. But now you take it one step removed. Let's say that if we brought down the price of refrigerators, that would cure the energy pollution problem in the world. And people went out and started arguing about the price of refrigerators. It would totally diffuse the concept of burning high energy content fuel for energy. It is a terrible idea to take inert material, whether it's nuclear, natural gas, oil, petroleum derivatives, coal, whatever, and inert materials that were just sitting there in the earth. You burn them, except for nuclear, all of them require oxygen. We are burning up the oxygen on Earth. And there is a myth also that has been proven that the Amazon jungles do not supply us with the oxygen of planet Earth. That's part of an oxygen cycle. But there's another myth, absolute myth, because NASA has taken satellite studies, CO2 readings, for a long time. They've been monitoring the CO2 content of the surface of the Earth. And the largest CO2 regions of the Earth are above the Amazon jungle. How does that work? Where all of the CO2 is supposed to be converted into oxygen. And the high concentration of automobiles and coal-burning power plants, etc., New York City, Los Angeles, the big Paris, Tokyo, Mexico City, horrible, horrible pollution from auto transportation and truck transportation, bus, etc., have no CO2 signature at all. The biggest CO2 signature on the planet comes from the regions of Argentina where there's high-density cattle production for McDonald's hamburgers. That's no joke. That's where the highest spike location of CO2 comes from. But it's really a non-issue because the greenhouse effect does not work. And this is why we have to talk about Venus in the very beginning. And at the very end, I'll get to Trump pulling out of the Paris Accord, which was just a new world order designed, just a ripoff contract, which we were supposed to volunteer to pay $3 trillion to other countries who were allowed to pollute and create more coal-fired plants than we would ever create and burn all of the dirty coal that comes from their region without abatement, without limitation, causing far more pollution so that they would industrialize those countries. And this was the Paris Accord? No, it was strictly designed to destroy the United States and Trump to his benefit to the United States and per his election promise. Walked out. I'm just amazed we have a president that understands these things and acts on it in a way that's beneficial to the United States. And moving into using local energy sources from the United States and this part of the hemisphere, using those energy sources instead of, just think, it takes 20% of the oil from the Middle East just to move it to the United States. 20% of it is burned up on ships out in the ocean just to move it. It's a big industry. The shipment of energy is a big industry. But anyway, let's get back to Venus. Where did this all start? This greenhouse effect that nobody talks about anymore, but they've translated into global warming and then global climate change because they realized that the Earth was actually cooling. So let's go back to 1967. We could actually go back to 1961. And by the way, the Russians had a space program that dwarfed that of the United States. All of this hype in the United States, how we were winning the space race, the United States never won anything in the space race. The Russians were far, far ahead of the United States. By 1961, the Russians were already sending spacecraft to Venus. And finally, in 1967, they got one to actually land. It was the Venera 4 spacecraft. And at that point, they measured the temperature of the surface temperature of Venus. With subsequent spacecraft, we learned many things about the atmospheric properties of Venus. But the surface temperature as early as 1967 was known to be 860 degrees Fahrenheit, 430 degrees centigrade. So really hot, hot enough to melt lead. And the atmospheric pressure on Venus, something that was not anticipated either, was around 92 Earth atmospheres. So the surface pressure on Venus is the equivalent of the water pressure 900 meters, 3,000 feet under the surface of the ocean. Tremendous, tremendous pressure. And here's the clincher, 96% CO2. So this created a problem in the young NASA, because they were already fighting something on a daily basis. It was not as prominent as it was into the 1970s, but we're starting to approach that. And the Venera mission made scientists realize that, hey, Earth was a very different planet than Venus. Venus did not rotate, even though we see these tremendous winds in the upper atmosphere. Once you get down to the surface of Venus, it basically is not rotating like Earth. It's a 243-day backwards rotation. So very different from Earth. It did not have a magnetic field. And then we later learned from other spacecraft that the surface of Venus is volcanic. There are thousands and thousands of volcanoes on Venus. They literally cover the surface of Venus, and they're constantly changing. They'll grow up, and then they'll sink back in. So the surface of Venus is very plastic, like molten plastic. And it would look like, if you could go down and look at it, or if you could take away the atmosphere and look at Venus, it would look like boiling oatmeal. You know, you put the water in, you get the water boiling, then you put the oatmeal in, and then when it finally gets up to the final state, it's like bloop, 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 all over. That's what the surface of Venus looks like. So thousands and thousands of active volcanoes going off on Venus, 96% CO2. So in their need, in their psychologically depraved need to create a theory that explains this high temperature, NASA came up, and this was Carl Sagan, and this is where this all began, created what they called the greenhouse effect. They said that the energy comes in from the sun, then it tries to escape in the form of infrared radiations. It's blocked by the clouds or the CO2, and then reflected back down to the surface. But the only problem is, when they measured the surface the temperature profile of the clouds, the clouds are actually very cold. In fact, near the North Pole of Venus, the temperatures are far colder than the atmosphere of Earth, and the atmospheric pressure drops down. So what you get, it's almost like a planetary hurricane in which the low pressure cells at the poles of Venus are very low. And so this is you have to wonder, what is causing these winds? And clearly it's an electrical interaction with the solar wind, because Venus does not have a moon. Venus does not have a protective magnetic field. It has the solar wind hits directly on the upper surface of the atmosphere of Venus and creates X-rays. You can see an X-ray signature. I'm sure I have on my webpage someplace the X-ray signature on the upper surface on the sunward side of Venus. And the upper cloud tops of Venus, mainly sulfur compounds, etc., are so white that they reflect literally 100% of the light that hits the upper atmosphere. And that's why Venus is very bright in the night sky. And it's not 100%, nothing is 100%, but it's very close to 100% of the light. So the question is, with the incredibly small amount of light that gets down to the surface of planet Venus, how did this somehow heat up the planet, the entire planet, to boiling point and create this greenhouse effect? Well, in comes the white hats at NASA. and they say, well, it was 4.5 billion years old, like all the other planets. Wait a minute, Hancho and Pancho and Cisco and Sagan. There's no proof of this. This is simply a statement that comes out of standard science. It is an axiom. It's an axiom. It's something that they have stated, they repeat and they state. And I've asked scientists at NASA, I said, why is it 4.5 billion years? They go, well, that's because that's what we're told to say. That's the reason the geologists, when we're talking about Mars, etc., I've been at American Geophysical Union meetings. I presented there. I've been inside Los Alamos. I've been at inside military meetings dealing with real science. And but the tier two scientists, and this is something you have to understand too, Carl Sagan, Neil deGrasse Tyson, climate scientists are tier two scientists. They are not tier one scientists. They don't deal with reality. They don't have to. In fact, their whole purpose is to present incorrect information. The reason they get their name in lights is because they've stepped up to the plate with a bag of crap, and that's what they're trying to pawn off on you, and that is why they get to be famous. So back to the idea of real science. Okay, understanding that 96% of the atmosphere of Venus is CO2, the alleged greenhouse gas, it has 92 times the atmospheric pressure than Earth, so that means there's a lot of CO2 there, gazillions of times more CO2 than Earth would ever have. But if we can show that the greenhouse effect does not work on Venus, then it's a simple tautology, logical inference, to infer that the greenhouse effect does not work on Earth. So let's look at the greenhouse effect on Venus. If the greenhouse effect works on Venus, then we would have a little problem, because Venus doesn't spin. Venus does not spin. It basically, for 200 and or half of that to about 150 days, shows the same side of the planet to the sun. But the problem is that the surface temperature of the planet is the same on the night side as on the day side. And so you say, well, how does that temperature get around to the night side of Venus without varying by more than 1 degree? It varies by less than 1. The surface temperature of Venus is constant all over, at the poles, at the equator, all over the planet. And so how exactly does this greenhouse effect do this, so that the temperature is uniform around the planet? So we come back to other data regarding Venus, and that is that the surface winds at Venus, although the upper atmosphere winds are hurricane force, the surface winds at Venus are zero. There literally isn't any. It's like a hot summer day in August when there's no wind. So basically, let's look at another property of the so-called greenhouse effect. Let's look at an actual greenhouse or your car on a hot day. You know, you go into the mall, you leave your car in the parking lot, you come back and it's just roasting in there. You got to open the doors and let the heat out. Why is that? Well, that's the greenhouse effect, because the light comes in, the sunlight, and of course you probably put something on your windows to prevent the sun from coming in. That helps a little bit. But the sunlight comes in, changes to infrared heat, which is blocked by the glass in your car, and therefore it traps the heat in there. And so you think, oh, the greenhouse effect. That would mean that a planet could also do this. But the problem with a planetary condition is, there again, you come back to the actual measurements of the temperature profile in the atmosphere of Venus. And the clouds are actually very cold. And so how does this cold cloud then reflect this immense amount of heat back down to the surface? And the simple answer, it does not. Now, let's come back to Earth here. let's go out to the desert, a really hot, dry desert. And it's hot in the daytime. Man, it's hot. But as soon as the sun goes down, the temperature drops like a rock. Now, why is that? If the greenhouse effect was there, then that heat should all be trapped because it's not dependent on the atmospheric temperature. It's dependent on those clouds or the CO2, abundant CO2, so-called, in the atmosphere, blocking that heat from leaving, but it doesn't. It leaves like right now. And that's because the greenhouse effect that people talk about on Earth does not work. The actual reason, like say you're in Kansas City and it rained really hard, but it's a hot summer day, 100 degrees, Kansas City in the summertime. And after the rain, the temperature stays about the same into the nighttime. Why is that? That is because of a little thermodynamic property called heat content. Heat content is the fact that the air has water in it, and it maintains the temperature much better than dry air. So let's go to another little example. I use this all the time. Let's take two boxes of air. They're exactly the same. Regular air, you just open up the box, let the atmospheric air come into the box, you close the box. The boxes are the same size. They have exactly the same temperature. They're sitting on a table side by side. Okay, the thermodynamic properties in the box are pressure, atmospheric humidity, content of the various chemicals, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon dioxide, etc. And that gives you the thermodynamic properties of the box. And another thermodynamic property is the heat content. If you could take all the little molecules and all their motion and add them all up, that would give you the heat content. And they're also radiating. And imagine that inside the box, we have perfect mirrors on all sides. So any radiated energy comes back into the box. It's not filtered away by any mechanism like radiation or radiative transfer, etc. All the energy stays in the box. Okay, so now we take one box. Keeping it the same temperature, we insert water vapor. Same temperature. One box has more water content in it, in the air, than the other box. Which box has more heat content? It's the box that contains the water. The other drier box has less heat content, and what's the temperature? They're the same. So the question is temperature the thermodynamic parameter that we would use to measure heat content? And when they talk about global warming, global climate change, global warming implies heat content, that there's more heat building up in the atmosphere. So you can see that temperature has nothing to do, it's not the thermodynamic property, it's not the thermodynamic parameter that you would use to indicate that there's more heat in the atmosphere today than there was yesterday, or to predict in the future. Now, what do you have to do on a worldwide scale to measure all of these properties, atmospheric pressure, the content of various chemicals or aerosols in the atmosphere, the cloud and moisture content? The temperature is one of the things that you would measure, but it's not the parameter that you would use to indicate heat content. We know that from these very simple examples. So why do scientists, global climate change scientists, depend on using temperature as somehow an indicator of a scientific measurement? It has nothing, absolutely nothing, zero, nil, nothing, nada, nothing to do with the thermodynamic properties that you would measure and record and publish relative to global climate change. They're lazy. They're lazy scientists. They stick a thermometer out the window. They go, it looks like it's a little warmer today. Must be global climate change. Let's pass a law that's put a carbon tax on the United States. This idea of taxing What does the tax do? Where does it go to help solve the problem? No, it's a way of, in Canada, it's sucking them dry. I know Canadians, they're suffering. They are being taxed. Their eyeballs are being taxed out. They can't exist. Canada is a country that is failing because they bought into the carbon tax deal. Their politicians have, Trudeau has sold them down the river. And that's where the United States was headed until Trump pulled out of this Paris climate change accord, which is, okay, so let's go back to Venus. The greenhouse effect, and this, by the way, was noted very soon after Sagan and the boys at NASA, who really, in the real scientific community, nobody trusts the scientists at NASA. I can tell you that from experience. And certainly in Tier 1 science, they laugh at them because they are allowed to perform bad science. But shortly after the so-called greenhouse effect, the scientific community came back to Sagan and the boys and said, hey, buddy, this doesn't work. The greenhouse effect does not account for the high temperature of Venus. And so Sagan goes away for a week and he comes back and he says, well, it's the exaggerated greenhouse effect. I mean, this literally happened. And they just tacked the word on exaggerated greenhouse effect. But now let's look at the numbers. The CO2 content of Venus is absolutely enormous compared to the CO2 content of Earth. The CO content of Earth is typically quoted in parts per million, and the claims show that it is increasing. But, okay, let's talk about actual global temperatures. Now, it's something I've been monitoring, and what they don't tell you, the climate data has been fudged. Let me just put it that way. Because the tropical temperatures have been lowering, literally, in recent years. And the other thing is, where do they measure the temperatures? They measure them at the airport, downtown radio station. So the temperatures are being measured at locations where there's a lot of cement. And typically, the temperatures 5 miles out in the country from the airport are a number of degrees lower. So it's skewed data. They don't have many monitoring locations around the Earth. And even if they did, temperature is not what you would measure to implicate global climate change. They would have to put monitoring stations for all of those thermodynamic properties, not only around the Earth, but up in the atmosphere and down in the ocean, because we have ocean currents. What we have is lazy science, lazy scientists who, like I say, stick a thermometer out the window, temperature went up by a degree, global warming, and they have been getting funding for decades based on this climate change hysteria, which they are not making proper measurements. An additional factor is the news media then carries one side of the story, which is something that we found out for political agendas, etc., is very common. So there's the news media, which is very controlled, picks up a theme based on what they're told to propagate. They then put it into the media, and this is much of the hysteria. I mean, if they came along and said, you know, the moon is made out of green cheese, it's going to have bacteria, and we're all going to die, after you repeated that enough times in the news media, and scientists came out and started repeating it, certain scientists who are part of the paid agenda, then, and by the way, are these scientists doing this on purpose? No, they really believe it. They believe it. And so, but the problem is in the journals, in the scientific literature, or my voice, when I'm talking about the fact that temperature is not a thermodynamic property that you would record or report on, if you're talking about global climate change, that's not the parameter you would talk about at all. But you can't get a word in edgewise, and the very scientifically uneducated public pick this up and march with it. And so you have people who are not scientists, people who are alarmists, picking it up, and they're very adamant about this. Books have been written, political careers have been built on this, that they're going to support climate change. You know, we have worldwide agendas and meetings and, you know, the G7, the economic structure of the world is based on this. And it's phony science, absolutely phony science, if you even want to call it science. It's bad science at its worst. Let's go back to 1990, well, about 92, maybe 93. I'm teaching astronomy at the university level in a state system, and I start to see this coming. I start to see that people are using green as a mode of advertisement. All of a sudden, Cisco routers are being advertised as green. Green? Green Cisco routers? What do you mean? Oh, they're using a little bit less energy, which is typical of modernization of electronics. Typically, newer electronics uses less energy, but all of a sudden, they're using green. And I said, green is going to be the new marketing label for IBM, for everybody, and it was. But I gave a talk to the faculty of the institution where I was teaching, and I brought them together, and I said, look, the greenhouse effect is phony. And that's when they actually used the term greenhouse effect. And they were all shocked. They said, what do you mean? It's phony. It doesn't work. And so I sat down and I explained pretty much the way I'm explaining to you, that this is a political agenda, and that the scientists who pick up the banner for global climate change, or for in that day, the greenhouse effect, that we were all going to die from driving our SUVs up and down the road from this global warming effect. And at that time, I also knew that it was a political tool to control water, to control governments, to control agendas, to control ownership of property, or to limit the use of industrialization or other political social engineering goals. I knew that. And so I projected it at that time, and that's exactly what it became. The UN agendas, the global climate change initiatives, all of this are using this for the first thing is they always talk about whenever you see the articles when they're talking about global climate change, etc. The first thing and the last thing they talk about is water. Water. We live on a planet that's 3/4 water. How come we have a water shortage? We have a lot of fresh water. How come there's a water shortage? Well, it occurred to me that there's not a water shortage problem. There's a water management problem. It's the same issue with oil. There's not a shortage of oil. In fact, I knew a geologist, or he was actually worked in the computer rooms of the geology departments of large oil companies. And by the mid-1990s, early 2000s, it was well known in the geological companies related to oil that there was so much oil identified in Earth that they could never, ever possibly harvest it all. I did some calculations, and if you burned all of the tar oil that was available in just the oil fields of Venezuela, you would literally burn up all the oxygen on Earth, which tells you something, that oil, that tar, and the coal in all the other places in the world did not come from fern forests, because that's supposedly what created our oxygen atmosphere. And there's lots more of it than could possibly, if all of that plant life had lived at one time, we would have much more oxygen on Earth than we currently have. So that is not the source of oxygen on Earth. And it turns out that we are picking up oxygen all the time on planet Earth. It's coming in just like dirt, just like dust, just like water is coming into Earth constantly. Because we are discharging the solar capacitor, we're acting as a comet, and we're constantly picking up material from the local environment of outer space, just like Jupiter, just like the moons of Jupiter, just like our own moon, which has a sodium cloud, which is picking up sodium at a constant rate. And that's where the sodium in the oceans. I've talked about all these topics, so I'm getting a little bit off topic here. But the point is that the Earth is a dynamic planet. It's changing all the time. Where does the oil come from that's 18,000 miles under the surface of the ground? Abiogenic oil does not explain it. Fern forests and dinosaur bones does not explain it. Well, there's a good explanation for it. That's because the Earth took on that oil at a point in history when that was the surface of the Earth. And the dirt that's piled up on top of that has accumulated over millions of years. And so Earth has been constantly changing. So to pick up a rock on the surface of Earth and say, this tells us the age of Earth, is ludicrous. Standard science is filled with ludicrous assessments. For example, if you pick up a lunar rock and look at it and measure its date by some means, that has nothing to do with the age of the moon, because all this, everything on the surface of the moon is recent volcanic activity, or its material that came in from beyond, has nothing to do with the core age of the moon. So we really don't know, and we really can't say. So it's really offensive for scientists to come out and say, 4.5 billion year old universe or solar system. It's ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. There's no scientific basis for that at all. But how is this related to the greenhouse effect? Well, when we go back to Venus, and they have to justify the temperature of Venus being hot today relative to being 4.5 billion years old, then you have to come up with some kind of mechanism. Therefore, the exaggerated greenhouse effect. But if the greenhouse effect does not work on Venus with its massive CO2 atmosphere, then it cannot work on Earth. But there again, we're getting away from the real heart of the issue. The real core issue is here. We should not be burning the quantity of fuel, nuclear, coal, propane, natural gas, petroleum-based products. We should not be burning this quantity of fuel because it's polluting the atmosphere, the ocean, the water. It's using oxygen that we need to breathe. And nuclear pollution is far worse. It's far more deadly, far more long-term than any other form of energy. Those are the real issues. I've even seen people say that CO2 is good, therefore we should burn more fossil fuels. That's the other side of this ridiculous debate that's been raging in the public. No, we should be using less and less, finding more efficient ways to work, and finding actually environmentally friendly ways of converting energy, either solar or wind, into energy that we need on a daily basis. But those industries have been completely plagued also because the energy companies don't want to give up reins of the power. The central power companies want to continue to control the power that goes into the power lines that goes to your industry or house. They don't want, they have it written in their, basically their operating procedure, that they can shut down any alternative energy source at the from producing energy. And they actually do this. In Canada, they're doing it. And the government subsidies that go into alternative energy, solar and three-blade wind generators, is horrendous. This year, the subsidies and tax credits for three-blade wind generators ended, and so nobody's investing them into those anymore. Why? Because that's where they made their money. They didn't make their money off of producing energy. They made their money off the tax subsidies and tax credits. A listener sent me in a clip to a video from Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he's been on the forefront also of this climate denier, or Bill Nye the Science Guy, who I wouldn't consider being a scientist. I wouldn't put him in the category of being a scientist. But they're forefront in leading this charge. It's rather an intimidation charge. In other words, they're supposedly big scientists or representative, and you're supposed to listen to them, and that's why they're there. That's why a lot of talk show hosts are there, because they're promoted to be there so that when something comes down, they can mold the message that the public should listen to and bite into. But the listener sent me a clip. I'll see if I can post the link on my webpage. But the myth here is that, first of all, as with Leonardo DiCaprio or Al Gore or Neil deGrasse Tyson or other people who are supporting climate change, they first start out with this very, you know, clear view of planet Earth. And in this case, deGrasse Tyson talks about science, how America advanced and became the greatest nation in the world, and technology, and all based on science, and then implies that climate change science is therefore correct because all of this other science and engineering was correct. And you always hear that, oh, all of these scientists agree with climate change. Well, that's because they've pushed out, and politically, you could not exist in these organizations like the EPA, etc. And once again, thank Trump for flushing out the EPA, getting rid of climate change, which was a big boondoggle, and just getting rid of it, canceling it, no more. I mean, I just can't believe that we finally got somebody with a brain in leadership that can just take this and do away with it, the Paris Accord. And like I say, you can tell the people who are destined or want to see the U.S. destiny destroyed, because the Paris Climate Accord, which I'll talk about in just a minute, was a disaster for the United States. But this video by deGrasse Tyson builds on the idea that climate change is a scientific fact, and it's not. It's poor science. Temperature measurements they made is based on poor science. It's not what you would measure if you were going to talk about global heating or the energy. And it turns out we are coming out of an ice age. The Earth is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. It's just that we're polluting the crap out of it. And we're using up the easily accessible so-called fossil fuels, which are not fossil fuels. But we're using the easily accessible ones at a record pace, leaving nothing for future generations. What are people in 1,000 years or 2,000 years going to use? We're using this up at a record pace and without any recourse. I mean, this is not renewable. These are energy sources that are not renewable. And so anyway, that's why I'm working in the background very diligently on solving this and other problems. But climate change is the whole science that it's based on is bogus, and it's a political tool. So let me get into the Paris Agreement and everything else that's been going on. Now, when you look at the agreements and the accords, they talk about things like, oh, we're going to reduce emissions by 25% by the end of the century. The end of the century? I mean, we're only 2017. That's like 83 years away. That's not an agreement. That's not a policy. That's ridiculous. Or that the United States, now here's one that had some teeth in it in the Paris Accord, that the United States had to cut CO2 emissions by the year 2020, which is just a couple years away, 2.5 years away, by 25%. That would mean we'd have to shut down our coal plants. And remember, that's where Obama was going. He was shutting down coal plants. But remember, we're not building new nuclear power plants. We're not building new gas or any kind of power plants. So that would simply mean the United States would be forced into third world status. You would not have energy. You would have rolling brownouts like in third world countries where the energy is simply not available. And end of story. The United States would be sucked dry, plus you would have to pay $3 trillion out to countries like India and China, etc., which were developing, where all of the industry and jobs would go, leaving the United States population with an immense tax burden to pay off this huge debt, no energy, no ability to develop or develop further, and then
But let's look at this so-called solution. Was this going to solve the greenhouse gas pollution? Is it a solution? No, because India, China, Pakistan, all these other countries would be able to build coal plants, and they have dirty coal. They have really dirty coal with a lot of oil and volatile chemicals, and they could just burn it without any restrictions at all, build as many as they want, and industrialize, putting all of the jobs and the economic growth into those countries. So the Paris Accord was designed to destroy the United States because Europe is not an economic power. Europe would have benefited by the money filtering through them off to these other countries. So they would have benefited. I really like it. Angela Merkel is over there trying to convince Trump that he should really stay in this Paris Accord. It's really, really, really good. And Trump is like, no. He just got up and walked out, came back to the White House and said, we're pulling out. If they want to renegotiate, we'll take a look at it. But, you know, sayonara. The problem is, in the United States, we've got people that have a hard time balancing their checkbooks, trying to analyze the climate situation based on what they read in the newspaper. Oh, my goodness. The real issue comes down to one of anger. And I see this a lot in people who are very adamant about climate change and, you know, save the world, etc., that there's a lot of anger that has developed. And I've seen that in other things like in the political arena, etc. There's a tremendous amount of anger. In other words, if you don't agree with me, then we cannot talk. There's no discussion. You have to agree with me. Otherwise, you know, literally just severe levels of anger. But based on what? Based on phony science? And these are people who are not scientists. So you can't talk about the actual scientific issues. The real scientific issues I've outlined. The greenhouse effect came from the study of the planet Venus. And it doesn't work on Venus, which has massive amounts of CO2. It does not work on Earth, but it's a side issue. We should not be burning the level of carbon dioxide emitting fuels because it's burning oxygen, and carbon dioxide is not the worst pollutant. We have thousands of other pollutants that are coming out of gasoline, diesel, coal, etc. Coal is the biggest polluter in the United States, yet it produces our electrical energy. We could cut out the entire nuclear fleet right now, 104 nuclear power plants in the United States, simply by conserving energy. Leaving the lights on, the computer, leaving the, you know, using excessive energy. We could cut out the 17 to 19% of our energy, electrical energy budget, simply by cutting out by conservative means. At any rate, I said also I would cover this. I'll talk about it next week, the fact that there are no insects. Out of time for this week. Remember, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, the paid cast, the 10% plus 5% sale on water filters and water filter products. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.